Okay. My name is Raji. I'm Principal Program Manager Lead in the Office 365 Security Team. And today I'm going to talk to you about how you own your data, you have the control of your data when you move to the Office 365 Cloud because of the new investment that we are making in the access control technology. So this is an afternoon session, pretty much in a dark room. Feel free to stop me for any questions. I hope I don't put you guys to sleep. I have a couple of giveaways. They are very cool. They are some kind of connectors. What makes it more cool is it has a logo that it's from Office 365 Security and Compliance. I thought I'll make it more cool. I'll get Satya to sign it, but I'm not cool enough. He told me, like, you know, go away. So, okay. So let's get going. Let's try to understand breaches, right? How many of you here are already in Office 365? Okay. And how many of you are running on-prem? Okay, so we have few of you running in on-prem, and I'm sure you have a lot of concerns. Few of you, you're already in Office 365, certainly have concerns about how we are securing your data and stuff like that. And few of you who are running on-prem, we want you in the cloud. So I'm going to talk today about our technology, and if you have any question, any doubts, concerns, this is the time. Like, I'm here to answer any questions. Okay, let's try to understand data breaches. I mean, it's a scary feeling. It's a scary feeling to secure the data, whether you're on-prem or you're in the cloud. It's not easy. Let's look at the few breaches that's happened over this year or the past few years in the recent times. Let's start with the retail, right? Like, I mean, anything where we do business seems to be getting hacked. Simple things like Home Depot. I'm sure almost all of you are buying your stuff in Home Depot for your home improvements. Target, a normal place where people go, gets hacked. Home Depot had about 56 million records stolen. Target had about 70 million records stolen. I can't say the same about Neiman Marcus. I don't go there. It's too expensive for me. But let's talk finance. JP Morgan. Again, 76 million records stolen. Many of you may be banking there. NASDAQ got hacked. Pretty scary stuff out there. This scares me, right? Anthem and Primera, my health records are over there. I mean, to me, they are sacred. I don't want anybody to get access there. But Anthem had 80 million records got stolen just this year. Any big tech that you can think of, Yahoo, eBay, Yahoo had 500 million records. They just called out this week about the breach. eBay, about 145 million records, Adobe, LinkedIn, any company that you can think of have been having breaches. And this is not only restricted to big companies, even the small companies that you can think of, Uber, Slack, Ubuntu, Snapchat, all these companies have been announcing breaches. And whether you're running on-prem or you're running cloud, it's not an easy job to secure data. Sony Pictures, media, all of you must be remembering, like, they had an issue with respect to the movie Interview, The Guardian of Peace, they attacked them. And not but not the least, DNC guys, possible, like, one of the two presidential candidates got hacked, like, DNC got hacked. And there are a lot of types of hackers. The hackers start from being script kiddies who write few lines of codes and try to hack, all the way up to the nation state. I mean, there is a rumor that DNC got hacked by Russians. So there are all types of hackers out there, and it's scary. These are some of the statistics. There's 10% increase in targeted attacks on the organizations in the past year, and 43% of the organizations suffered at least one security incident. Black market lights up. I mean, it's a fertile ground if you have stolen data, 360 million stolen credentials. And typical common things are the phishing breaches and the zero-day attacks. That's the most common hacks that's out there. But what is more scary is this. You may think your data is secure, but it typically takes 229 days to see the security infiltration. Detection is a hard problem to solve. Like, oftentimes, like, for example, Home Depot and Target, where insider attacks, the attacks started from hacking through one of the vendor companies that they had, and they did not even know that they were hacked. I mean, Home Depot came to know about the hack, from the financial institution. Like, I mean, people started reporting, the banks started reporting that people are using the credit cards, and that's how they came to know. So detection is a hard problem to solve. So it's a scary world out there, but Office 365 is thriving. It's one of the fastest growing cloud service we have in Microsoft. And in this presentation, it's going to be mainly focused on what we are really doing out there to secure your data, and why we believe that it is safe for you to put your data out there in the cloud with us. These are some of the statistics. 70% of our enterprise renewals are in the cloud. So our cloud business is extensively growing. What you see on the right-hand side are one of the recent companies that's moved to cloud. And my favorite is the statement by the CIO of Facebook, Tim Campos. He says, this is why we have implemented Office 365. Not only is it a mature and comprehensive platform, it meets our stringent security standards. It complements how we work with intelligence, flexibility, and it's continually evolving. And that's a very powerful statement out there, right? There's a lot of research that goes on before you really move to cloud, and that is like a good testament for us when it comes from him. But let's try to understand, right? Let's try to understand the threats in detail. I'm going to be talking here in clear detail about what are the kind of threats, what we are doing. Feel free to stop me anytime, and I'll be open with you, like what we are doing to protect your data. Let's understand the threats in detail. We had certain people here who said that they are still on-prem. Not many, but there are few here who are still on-prem. And when you are on-prem, these are the kind of actors you worry about. You worry about your tenant admins. You worry about your users. You are interested in keeping, in ensuring that they access your data in a very secure way. And you are worried about your attacker. Just because you're on-prem, your data is inside your office, in some servers over there, it doesn't really stop the attackers. The moment you allow in your company anybody to use phone, and they are seeing their mails in their phone, you're exposed out. You're out there in the internet. It doesn't matter whether you're on the cloud or you're not on the cloud. You are on the cloud the moment you use phone. So you are worried about the attacker. But when you move to cloud, you move the data to the cloud, and some people run hybrid, so some data is also there within your data center. You're worried about the third persona. The third persona that you worry about when you move to the cloud is your cloud service provider. Let me use the new terminology. Let me introduce. This is the people whom we call as OCE. OCE is on-call engineer. These are your developers in Microsoft Office 365 team who are actually running the service for you. Microsoft runs in the DevOps model. We don't run in the Ops model, so our developers are our Ops. And these are the people, these are the third set of actors now you worry about. Like, you know, are they having access to my data? Are they snooping into my data? It's a genuine concern. And in this presentation, I'll be able to address on what we are doing to ensure that Microsoft doesn't have access to your data unless and until you really allow it. Before I get there, the three personas I talked about. So I'm going to first talk about the investment that Microsoft does to secure your tenant admins and users. I'm not going to go in detail in this presentation. I'm just going to point you towards the other presentation that has happened there. But some of the key investment we have is we support multi-factor authentication for your tenant admin and users. We do MDM so that when people use mobile and phones in your company, it's in a secure way. We have a concept of DRM and IRM where the messages can be encrypted and used. We have DLP. DLP is the thing where you can define rules so that, like, your employees by mistake don't send like credit card information and other information out. It's a data loss protection. We have several spam and phish mitigations and anomaly detections to see if something is wrong that's happening in your tenancy. We have a concept of activity reports. I'm going to go in detail a little bit later, so I won't cover it much here. And we have robust remediation. If something happens wrong with your tenancy, we provide support with respect to change in passwords and stuff. And this is our new flashy feature. We have something called as a secure score, where in your tenancy, you will be able to compute and see how secure you are. We will compute a percentage for you, and this is right now available. You'll be able to see, oh, okay, I am 76% secure compared to other people in my industry, be it banking or health or finance. How do I improve this? So this is a feature you can use. These are the kind of presentations that's been happening either like earlier in this week or now or going to be later in the week. If you have missed them, feel you should be able to get the recording of this. But in this presentation, I'm not going to go much further in detail with respect to what we are doing, but we are doing enough for securing the tenants. Now the second persona, let's talk about the attacker persona. The moment you move your data to the cloud, it is our responsibility to protect you against the attacker, and we do heavy investments over there. Let's quickly go over what we are doing for this persona. Before that, I really want you to understand how big is our service. And because of the scale of our service, we are invested heavily, heavily in security. I mean, we have a huge security team in Office 365, and I run the access control part of the security team. We don't run it in the ops model at all. Our security is run with innovation, right? And I'm going to talk a little bit more about it. But before that, let's try to understand. We have 63 million active users, and this is climbing. This is like from some time ago. Hundreds and thousands of users across multiple, multiple countries. We go release in countries as I speak. So thousands of servers for me to protect. Over 6 billion messages in a month. Over 6 billion calendar meetings. And these are just an example. And we have documents and links and thousands of things to protect. And we have to run with high availability. We run with 4 nines. All of these should always be able to be available for the services. How do we do this? So the mantra for running Office 365 has been automation. We try to automate everything. If this circle is the type of operation that's happening in the service, this much, a teeny tiny percentage, 1% is what requires a human to do anything. Not the human to go touch the data, for human to maybe invoke a task. Rest of the things are all automated. To give you an example, right? When we need to put something on one of the servers, let's say I need to deploy some bits in the servers, right? So it happens through what I call as Dropbox. So Dropbox will automatically go install a bit on the service. And let us say that server is going bad, there's a performance issue or whatever, then we have a concept of repair box. Repair box kicks in, and it repairs the box. So we really don't need humans to go and do things in the service. So it's a very, very small percentage. And a teeny percentage on it, like a 0.001% is what requires for us to do anything that touches customer content, that touches your email, or that touches your document, or anything that you put in Office 365. If I see the ocean of the service, the operations that we run, it's a very, very small percentage that's anything to do with customer data. And I'm going to talk about the investments that we have done. It's been over 4 years we are investing in this, which has resulted for us to come to this stage. But before I get there, attackers are out there. I just talked about like so many hacks that's happening out there. In Office 365, we assume breach. We invest heavily, heavily in the prevent breach technologies, but we always assume breach. So what do we do for prevent breach? This is just a few examples. We run a very secure code and a SDL culture for landing in the service. We have automated PAPC, as I said, like everything is automated as we run in the service. So we have an agent that goes and keeps all the machines updated with the patching and the antivirus status. We invest heavily in isolation. The reason we are able to talk about the fact that we run the service by barely touching it or touching the customer content is because of the investment we have done over 4 years in data and trust isolation. And I'll be talking in detail about it. And we have a concept of LPA. I'm throwing a lot of acronyms out here. OCE, on-call engineer. LPA is a least privilege access. These are like Bible for us. Least privilege access means when somebody, a OCE needs to go do something, he has to say, I need to do task one. And that task one has to be really, really narrowly scoped because he's going to get permission just to do that task one and nothing more. We invest heavily in prevent breach. I'm going to talk more about it, but we assume breach. And we run war game exercises. We run war game exercises very frequently. This used to happen like once in a quarter and once in a month, and we realized it's not good enough. So we automated that. We have a concept of attack bot. So we have a set of pen test team, really smart people, and they attack our service. They are internally, I mean, they are Microsoft Office 365 employees. They attack our service and they expose, oh, you have a breach opportunity there. There is a layer that you need to go fix, right? Because code is getting checked in on a daily basis. So it is quite possible that bad code gets checked in and the attackers can come through. So this set of red team keeps doing the breach exercises so that to expose the breaches that may happen in the service. It used to happen like once a month and we realized that's not good enough. So we automated there. We have a concept of attack bot where the red team codes the threats, codes the attacks, so that the attack bot keeps attacking our service. So if there is a PowerShell vulnerability that's checked in by mistake, this attack bot finds it and lets us know. And we have a centralized security logging and monitoring where we monitor every single security happenings that happens, and then we report it up, and then we fix it. So what is our security strategy beyond defense? We have a concept of red team. We have a concept of blue team. So the red team goes and attacks Office 365. It's an internal red team using attack bot and the other techniques that they have. And the blue team, blue team's job is to detect them. The blue team detects the bad things that the red team does, and then the blue team remediates, and then they have the incident response. So there is a constant tussle between the red team and the blue team, and that tension is by design. So we create that, and when we see the red team totally overpowering the blue team, that's not a good place to be. Then we increase our investments in the blue team. The red team is constantly empowered to go and attack, but the blue team better keep up with them. So that is the kind of war game exercises we do in Microsoft Office 365. And we are able to afford it because we are like so big and we have to invest in security accordingly. And beyond, sorry, he told me not to click. I didn't follow the rules, sorry. Okay, and not just that, we have a concept of bug bounty. So bug bounty is where, of course, there are very many smart people out there. That's why there are so many hacks happening, right? So we use their skills in a more constructive way. So if you can find a bug in Office 365, any bug, you can contact our bug bounty program. We pay pretty heavy cash for the people who are able to find bugs. And that is another mechanism through which we find our bugs and we go fix them. So these are the kind of things that we do to prevent against attacker. But this presentation today is more focused on Microsoft on-call engineer, like why you should move to cloud and why you should trust that we are not really looking into your data when you move to cloud. So I'm going to stop here, but if you have any questions on Microsoft's investments against attacker, come feel free to talk to me after this and I'll be open with you and give you more details on what we are doing to prevent against the attackers. But the persona that we are going to talk about today is OCE. Microsoft engineers, do they have access to your data when you move to cloud? But one thing, this is very interesting. See the cloud, our security service, Microsoft Office 365 service has grown exponentially in the last 4 years. It's one of the fastest growing service in the history of Microsoft. But if you see, our on-call engineer pool has stayed the same. We still run the entire Office 365 with about 4,000 engineers, and that's it. And these engineers spend most of their time writing code and not on really getting in and mucking up with the service components. And how has that happened? And I'm going to talk a little bit more deep about it. But this is a very interesting phenomenon, right? Like, as the cloud multiplies, it's not that we are throwing bodies in to run the service. The service is running by itself. And how do we do that? because we have state-of-the-art access control. There are some of the features that I'm going to be talking about here today, which nobody in the industry has. I mean, be it Google or anybody, nobody in the industry has this kind of features. And one of the core reasons is the kind of access control investment that we have done over the past few years. I like to look at this access control investment on three pillars. The first is service excellence. Okay, so I can give very scoped access control only if I have done enough investments in isolation, right? When I tell you that I'm going to give you access to do A and only A, I need to make sure that I give you tools to run only A and nothing more than that. So enough work has gone so that customer content is totally isolated from service operation. And we have a task-based execution model. All these on-call engineers that I'm talking about, they can never come and say, oh, I need to get into this mailbox server, which is hosting tens of thousands of data and have a field day. Nobody is going to approve them on that. They can only come and ask and say, I need to do this task A on this mailbox A, and that's how they operate. And we run our service with very, very minimal human touch. And that's why, like, as our service has grown exponentially, my on-call engineer base has not grown. It is still the same set of people. And then we have a concept of OCE excellence, like on-call engineer excellence. Okay, how many of you use nannies? Children, nannies, right? And do you do background checks before you leave your kids with nannies? You do, of course. I mean, it's important, right? And we have your data. For us, data is super important. The day there is one leak that happens in Office 365, I mean, that's a huge, big deal on our business. We seriously cannot afford it. So we do same kind of checks and many more checks than what we do with our on-call engineer. We do background checks. All our on-call engineers go through the US background check, and if they are international employees, there is international background checks where applicable. And we have a concept of clearances. We operate with government data. If you are doing anything to do with government data, you need to go through multiple level of clearances. There is CGIS, the state government clearances, and all those things we go through. You can do nothing in Office 365 without 2FA. We mandate 2FA for everything. We support 2FA using smart card and using phones. You can't do anything in Office 365 without 2FA. And there is many level of approvals that you need before a basic account gets created in Office 365. So here is a question for the first giveaway. As I said, we have like so many millions of users. At this moment, like right now, how many engineers do you think have standing access to the data? How many tenant admin type of people we have in the service? Anybody closest to the number, like closest to the order of tens, will get this. Zero? Okay, I heard a zero from here. Carolyn, do you mind giving this off? Your answer was right too, sir. But that's true. We have zero standing admin rights. Think about it. When you run your enterprise, your tenant admin has access to pretty much do anything. He can go set the delegation rules. He can do a lot of mucking around in the service, but not in Office 365. I mean, we ensure that we run our service with zero standing admin rights. How do we do this, right? And that is because of the technology excellence. We have invested heavily in the technology. I don't know how many of you have heard, the terminology lockbox before this, correct? Yeah, lockbox is the technology that we use to run our service, due to which we can boast that we run the service with zero standing admin rights. Lockbox gives just-in-time access. It gives just enough access for you to do the job and nothing more. All the access is time-bound. And there is logging and auditing for everything that happens in Lockbox. We go through tremendous certifications. I mean, if you operate in healthcare, you have to get through the HIPAA certification. And if you are in banking, there are some other certifications. We are able to provide all those compliance support for you because Lockbox does all this logging and auditing that you can go into and take a look, and it supports them. you don't have to believe me when I say that, hey, trust your data in Office 365. I'm going to show you exactly what we do in Office 365 to gain that kind of trust. And this is the pillar in which I like to explain this, right? So first, let's look at the promise. What is the kind of engineering rigor that we have using which I'm able to come here and say that we operate the service with the zero standing admin rights? An on-call engineer, when he needs to do anything in the service, anything at all, even as simple as he needs to reboot a box or he needs to go deploy a bit in the box, he goes and he asks permission to Logbox. Logbox then sends a mail to the Microsoft manager and it says, Raji seems to want to run this task A. Do you want to allow her to run the task A? And before that, I know whether you guys, how many of you attended Satya's keynote on Monday? Yes? And Satya talked about, like, we are going to invest heavily, heavily, heavily in artificial intelligence. And Logbox is another example of you for AI. Logbox makes a lot of decision to see that when a request is coming to it, is it a valid request? Is it a risky request? Or is it a request that doesn't look like it's the right thing to do? It kills the request right there. If Raji is asking to do task A, and if Logbox determines that task A is not appropriate for Raji to run, or it is not appropriate to be run in this server, Logbox will kill the request right there. And once the Logbox check is passed, the request then goes to the Microsoft manager, and the manager approves, and that is when the engineer gets access to run. And this is for any task. It's nothing to do with customer data. It is even to simply reboot a server in the data center. So all our permission model is scoped, and it's given with the least privilege. All the access is just in time. It is for a limited duration. And there is audit logs for every single access that we do. So that is the engineering rigor that we have. Why should you trust me? I mean, I am saying that there is an engineering rigor. Are you sure? And this is how we prove that. So we are very, very transparent about our data access, that we have released something called as the Activity Feed API. You can plug into the Activity Feed API, and that will expose everything that is happening in your tenancy with the user records, like how your users are accessing your own tenant, your data, your admin records, what's your tenant admins doing, and what is Microsoft doing with your data. All these are exposed through Activity APIs. And we have partnered with these ISVs, and these ISVs are growing. And if any of you is an ISV who want to partner with us, this is the right time. You can come talk to me. And you can write reports that all the enterprises are looking for to see, like, how their data got accessed, not just by Microsoft, by your own people, by your users, your tenant admins. And if these ISV reports are not good enough for you, we expose over 150 events and 80-plus fields. And if you are not seeing the field that you are interested in, come talk to me. I can add more fields to that. And you can have your own canned report to see how exactly your data is being accessed, either by your people or by us. So that is the transparency that I talk about, right? We have the technology, and we are very, very transparent to you about it, and we expose all these APIs. Okay, so we talked about promise, we talked about transparency, and for some people, it's not enough. There are some people who are super control freaks. I know that we heard here that there are people who are still running on-prem, and I'm sure they are not happy enough with the rigor that we have or the transparency. They would like to have control. And this feature, the customer Logbox, is a very, very unique feature for Microsoft. None of our competitors have it, and we are able to provide this feature because of the other investments that we have done in isolation. It's for control freaks like me, and trust me, control freak is not bad. It's good to be conscious about what's happening with your data. What is customer Logbox? So we believe, okay, this is the second giveaway. I'm going to call out from back if anybody knows. So we run millions, right? There are millions of users. There's billions of messages that's being, the transaction that's happening in a month. So in the last month, how many times do you think our engineers had to run anything in the data center that had anything to do with customer data? Actually, it's not zero. No, it's not 100. Okay, 10 is very close, guys. No, not two. Yeah, eight. Eight is what we had to run last month. And all the eight of them came from the support engineers, where the customer had to call and say that, hey, my mailbox is corrupted, and they had to go fix it. So we believe we never, ever have to touch your data without you guys calling us, where you cannot fix things by yourself. So when I do a customer lockbox demo, I'm going to show you a live demo. I'm going to show you a lot of things that's happening in our service, so please don't share this outside. I'm going to open PowerShell and show you things. We believe that the origination of this happens from the customer. So a customer calls and goes to support, then it comes to our OCE to say, hey, something wrong happened in this with my service tenancy. We need it fixed. As usual, the Microsoft engineer puts the request with Logbox and say that I need to run this commandlet to go fix this. It'll go to Microsoft Manager after the Logbox has done its due diligence to see that, hey, this request seems relevant. And after the manager approves, the engineer gets access to go do things in the service. But if you are a customer Logbox tenant, and customer Logbox is available in E3 as an add-on, it costs like $2 a user, or it's available as a bundle with E5. If you are a customer Logbox customer, then you are right there in the approval chain. The request is going to come to you, and only after you approve does the Microsoft engineer get access to the data. If you see something that is not right, if you didn't raise the request, if you're wondering why is Microsoft accessing my data, you can completely go ahead and reject the request right there. And Logbox will kill the request. And when we do the audit and stuff, it'll be looked at as to why the request was even raised in the beginning. So I'm going to show you a live demo of exactly how the customer Logbox operates. A customer from contiso.onmicrosoft.com raises a support ticket, and there is a corruption with his mailbox, and it needs to be fixed. So the Microsoft engineer gets the service request, and he's going to try to go fix this account. So this is our PowerShell, and this is how we operate. Typically, Exchange, I'm going to take an example of Exchange. Customer Logbox is available for Exchange as well as SharePoint. We operate heavily, heavily with PowerShell. So I go to this PowerShell, and I run new mailbox restore request. That is the commandlet that I use to go fix a mailbox. And what happens? I got an error. It's saying, oh, Raji, you don't even have rights to run new mailbox restore request because there is zero standing admin rights. Raji has a debug account or account to operate on the service, but she has no rights to run anything. Then what I typically do is I need to now go to the Logbox system, and I have to ask permission to run this commandlet. So I go to I go back to PowerShell. Then I run a commandlet called request logbox elevation. I have to be very, very specific to say, as I said, everything is task-based. So I have to be very specific to say what I want to run. I have to be very specific to say on whom do I want to run, and for how long, and why I want to run. All these information need to be supplied to Logbox. If I don't supply that, then things fail right there. Logbox will throw the request right there. So I'm going to run request logbox elevation by saying that I want to run this in contiso.microsoft.com. I want it only for the duration of 30 minutes. The maximum duration that you can ask for such request is 4 hours. Typically, our engineers they know exactly what they need to go fix. So 30 minutes is a good enough time. And I need to provide a service request number. When I am running something to do with the customer data, if there is no service request number, Logbox will kill it right there. Because there is no business for me to be running anything in the service without customer initiating that has to do with the customer data. So I run this. Then Logbox responds back by saying, okay, your approval is pending. Wait for it. And I get an email to say that your service change request is pending approval, so wait for it, wait to get approved. Then this is what Lockbox does. Lockbox is now going to send a mail to my manager, and my manager has, he can either click on the email by putting 2FA and approve, or this is our service portal, office service portal. He goes there and he can choose to approve or reject. And oftentimes, when it is to do with customer data, the Microsoft manager is extremely diligent because we run a monthly service review where we report these numbers, like what I talked about, 8 times that we had to do last month, gets reported all the way to our VP. And a manager is responsible to say why he approved, like why it could not have been done without touching the customer data. Let's say in this case it is very relevant, so he approves. And once it got approved, this is the mail I get to saying that, hey, you put in a request to Lockbox and your service change request is approved. But because it is a customer Lockbox tenant, it is pending approval from tenant admin. Only when the tenant admin approves am I going to get permission to go run the commandlet that I said. Till then, I don't have any permission. So then, now the customers are in the approval path, right? So what Lockbox does is it sends a mail to the customer. We used to send to the tenant admin, but we heard from the field that they want to have a concept of compliance admin because it's the compliance officer in the tenant who really cares about these things. So they get an email, and they have to go to the admin portal and log in. And you go to admin portal, and you get saying that, hey, there is a data access request that is pending for you. You need to approve. Looks like Microsoft is trying to access your data. They can choose to approve or they can choose to reject. So if you are a tenant, if you believe that you did not raise a request and Microsoft is looking into your data, this is a perfect opportunity for you to go and reject. Just reject your data and inquire Microsoft, what's happening? Why is somebody in your company trying to access my data? So this is putting you in complete control of your data. I mean, your data cannot be accessed without you approving. Let's say in this case, the customer, because it's a demo purpose, let's say the customer approves, he understands the SR number, and he approves. So the Lockbox moves the status to approved, and it sends me an email to say that, hey, the Lockbox action status of approval finished successfully. So my account is now provisioned to go run the commandlet that may expose some customer content to me. So now when I go back to my PowerShell, and I try to resolve new mailbox restore request commandlet, it resolves for me. It doesn't fail with an error because I have a half an hour permission to now run this. Lockbox has put my account, it has given appropriate RBAC permission so that I can run this commandlet for the next half hour, but only on one tenancy. Yes. The time starts when I get an email because that is the time when Lockbox really puts me in the appropriate group. Yes, correct. If it is 2 a.m., it is 2 a.m. We have a concept of, so the same thing came up when we had an internal Lockbox where the managers did not approve with a specific time. So we have introduced a new feature in Lockbox called delayed start. So if it is not a very compelling thing, I will be able to put a customer Lockbox request to tell the customers that, hey, approve, but the timing on this is going to start only at 8 a.m. tomorrow when my on-call engineer is going to come back to work. But the customers will get that visibility to say that they want permission for half hour from 8 a.m. tomorrow. And Lockbox will put me in the right group only when that time starts, with a delayed start. So we introduced that mainly because a lot of Microsoft managers were cross time zone or they were not available and they used to approve at 2 a.m. The engineer is not there and the thing expires after the duration. I'm sorry, yeah, the request does time out. So if I put a request in Lockbox and it doesn't get approved, it times out in 12 hours. So the Microsoft managers as well as the customers have about 12 hours to approve. And if you don't, then the lockbox automatically times out and kills the request. It goes to, it doesn't go to rejected state, it goes to expired state. That's one of the state. So now the commandlet resolves because now I have access. And now I'm able to run the new mailbox request commandlet on this tenant. And after half an hour, when the time elapses and a lockbox puts me back to the old state of a mere on-call engineer with no permission, so this whole on-call engineer account that I talked about gives me only one permission. It gives me permission to ask for permission and nothing more. So that's why I say zero standing admin rights. We do all these background checks, everything, but the only permission that I got is I got a data center account which gives me permission to go to lockbox, and that's about it. Everything else is controlled by lockbox. So now when I run the same new mailbox restore request commandlet, it fails. It just says that it is not a recognized commandlet for you because the PowerShell runtime when it loads, due to the RBAC that it computed, it doesn't see me having access to this. And so I now go fix. So this is customer lockbox. I mean, this is an absolute feature where nobody in Microsoft can get access to your data without you coming and approving our access to the data, right? Like, so this is the control feature. So when I talk about what do we do to earn and maintain your trust? So we have enough technical investment with lockbox and other engineering rigor that we have, and we are very transparent to you. That should be good enough for most of you where, like, we have Expose Activity API. Go and see after it happens to see how your data was accessed by us, by you. But if that's not good enough, you want to know at that moment when your data is getting accessed and you want to be the one who is actually approving, you want a full control, go sign up for customer lockbox. Either go for E5 or buy E3 add-on, and this gives you a complete control. It's like an insurance policy. It lets you have a good night's sleep. And still, why would you trust me, right? I mean, I'm just standing here and saying that I do this rigor, I do customer lockbox. What if I write code which doesn't go through customer lockbox, right? At the end of the day, we write code. Why would you trust me? I mean, I do a lot of EBCs, and there are some big customers who come and ask me this question. Yeah, why should I trust you? I mean, why would I trust Microsoft to say you're doing what you're saying you're doing? So I tell them, verify. Don't trust me, verify. So I have Om here, he's the trust champion. We have one full trust team, which is run by GPMs and engineering managers and a group engineering manager. And their job is to work with all these regulators who go through my code, who go through every single access point and ask me to prove that I'm doing what I'm saying that I'm doing. So they will ask any request. They will randomly pick requests from the on-call engineer, raised by on-call engineer, and I have to walk through the complete life cycle of the fact that they went to lockbox, they gained, the manager approved, and I have to also show them places where manager didn't approve. I have to show them places where lockbox killed the request, saying that it's risky. And after the manager approved, I have to show them that, look, here there is a customer lockbox customer. I went to them, and they approved. And I have to show them when the thing got rejected that we didn't get access. So all these things I need to prove to them. I recently did a customer lockbox audit, and it is strenuous. It is seriously strenuous. I mean, these are the set of auditors who come, and we have to show them all kinds of data before we get the accreditation. If you have any more questions on this, Om will be around. You should be talking to him. And we have accreditations from all these agencies. I mean, we have from SOC 1, SOC 2, FedRAMP, ISO, and FISMA, European Union model, all these things, right? But he's not going to like that I'm saying this, but I'm still going to say this. If you're not happy with these things, if you want your own auditor, right, like a third-party auditor to come and prove and come and muck around and see exactly we are doing what we are saying, there is a provision to that. Go talk to him. There is a provision to have a third-party auditor come and say that, you know, so that you can see exactly how our controls are. We have something called as a trust portal. We publish there exactly what kind of audits going on and what are we verifying and why. So verify. I mean, it's super important, right? Like, I mean, it's your data. You're moving it to cloud. You're giving it to us. You own your data. We are just simple custodians of your data. Why won't you verify? I mean, you should verify. It is like putting your kids in daycare. What kind of verifications we do, right? Of course. Verify. Go to the trust portal. It exposes all kinds of information. And as I said, this is the same story I said when I said transparency, right? Activity API. If you are not seeing some event and you want to see, come talk to me. If you want to see something in the trust portal, go talk to Om. And he can expose other emails to you. Go talk to them and tell them, hey, I want to see more things out there so that I can really believe you. Like, and it's our job. It's our job to tell you what you guys really want to learn because we want to be totally transparent here on how we handle your data. And in spite of that, so I told you about the engineering rigor. I told you about the promise. I told you about lockbox. I told you how transparent we are, and you can plug into our activity APIs. If you're a control freak, you get the trust factor. You can sign up to customer lockbox. You can verify everything in our trust portal, do audits that we do and you want to do. But in spite of that, if you want to get out of the service, you feel that Office 365 is not the right thing for you, we have a feature for you for that too. And that is what I call as BYOK, bring your own key or advanced encryption. In my mind, advanced encryption or BYOK is not a security feature. And I'm the security person in Microsoft, I'm telling you, it's not a security feature. It is an exit strategy feature. Security feature is customer lockbox. That is where you plug in and see that we are not getting access to your data without you approving. BYOK is an exit feature. But before we go to BYOK, let me try to explain. Microsoft does full encryption. We encrypt your data when your data is at rest. We do BitLocker everywhere. So there is no data in clear text in any of the disks that we have. We encrypt data in transit. In any time, any communication, server to server, forest to forest communication, any communication that we do encryption in transit with the latest technology that we have. So you don't have to sign up to BYOK to get the goodness of encryption. No. BYOK is your exit strategy feature. There was a presentation on this yesterday, right? If any of you attended the BYOK presentation? Okay. If you didn't, but if you want to learn more about it, go see the recording. I think this feature is coming end of this year or possibly beginning of next year. So you can sign up for this, but it is not a security feature. It is your exit criteria feature. So what happens is we do encryption at rest, we do encryption at transit. Those are the security things. And then we do a content level encryption. Irrespective of whether you're signing up for BYOK or not, all our content is encrypted, even at the process level. But you can now control the keys with which we are encrypting. When you're signing up for that, so the key control is with you. And if you want to exit Office 365 at any point of time, just flip the key. Change the key and exit. After that, the data that we have is a total bit bucket. It's nothing. It's irrelevant data. We can't even operate on it. Even any process cannot. Nothing can operate on it. So I call BYOK basically an exit strategy feature. Many in the industry feel that it's a security feature. They feel good about the fact that, oh, there is a data that's getting encrypted and I have control to it. If you feel good, sign up for it. I mean, it's perfectly available. But that is your exit strategy feature. The moment you come to cloud, if you're not feeling good about, in spite of what we do with Lockbox, in spite of the activity feed API, in spite of the fact that you can have full control with customer Lockbox, you can verify using our trust portal. If you want to exit, BYOK is it for you. And that's how I'll pretty much sum up, like when you come to cloud, right? Like we invest very, very heavily in the security feature, and we invest in automation and innovation in security. We do not run our data center in ops model. We don't believe in ops. We don't believe in giving rights to a set of people who can go run things in servers. Everything goes through Logbox. Everything goes through Logbox. And that's why, I don't know whether you guys heard, like we have, there was one presentation, we are going to German cloud, European cloud, where the Microsoft manager is not even a first level approval, because we do business in Europe and we do business in China, where they don't want people from United States even to be the first level approval. So there we have a concept of data custodians, people sitting in Europe and China who are the first level approvals. Beyond that, when you sign up for customer Logbox, you are the second level approval. Without your approval, nothing happens with your data in our cloud. You can verify everything, right? Like go to the portal, and if you don't have the controls that you see, go come talk to our compliance team. We are super motivated to provide you what you really want, because we really want you to get that good night's sleep when you move your data to our cloud. And in spite of that, if you really at some point of time want to exit, and you want at that moment your data to get out of our service, sign up for BYOK and just flip the beds, and after that you're out. So this is pretty much what we do, how we run the service, and why I believe that you guys own your data. I mean, it is your data. We are just your data custodians, but we are heavily invested to protect your data, because this is our core thing. I mean, this is our job. Pretty much, I mean, the presentation is done. I'm open for questions, anything you want to know. Yeah, so I can take this question, or if Gary, one of you. Logbox is available as E3 and E5 license. And as an E3 license, it's available as an add-on. It is a per-user add-on. I think it costs $2 per license. And as an E5, it comes as part of the bundle. And if you are in Europe, if you are part of the German cloud, then I think it is available as an add-on to E4 license, because E5 is not available in Germany. I see a couple of people leaving. I would be happy if you guys can give the feedback and leave, so that I know like exactly what you would like to. So give the feedback if you're leaving before the question.